up in the red room.
Before the stars can be paid, there gotta be a dope ass story on the page. Let the beast about the cage, that light about the dark. Can you build the inferno from an itty bitty spark? Coffee shop hustlers rise with the cream. A million other writers, same Hollywood dream. Your pen and paper, all like bullets in the gun. Write what you feel, say what you want in the red room. We say what we say, we do what we feel. We gotta keep it real
in the red room.
All about the crap of screenwriting. I fill my bottle up with lightning up in the red room.
So look, if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get in. What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, everybody?
2016.
Yeah. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. So you guys heard it today. You heard the bass from all the dudes in the house. Bass. How low can you go?
Wow.
Death row.
What does a brother know? Once again, back is the incredible rhyme animal.
Incredible.
Oh, it's okay. Sunday, for God's sake.
Yes. Wake up.
Oh, shit.
That go, song wake is... Up, wake look, up, wake up. It's the first of the month.
Oh, my God.
We into it.
Public Enemy is more relevant now than it ever was. Yeah, than it ever
true.
Was.
They were predicting some shit. Into a political show. You better
we're
watch
not
it.
Gonna get that. We did that.
Me and Chris
time.
Will wipe this out.
I know. I know. So y'all hear how we do it on the Rant Room? As you guys hear, we don't hear her voice. Lisa Bolakaja. She's at what con? Somebody con today.
The indigenous peoples. Con. Yeah, she's. That's it. Tweeted up some all these comics she bought. They look cool. So I'm gonna see if I can borrow them from her when she's back.
So she's over there today representing for us. And so I got my man in the house, Big Bro, Jeff Thorne, producer, writer, comic book dude.
Oh my God.
Author.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay. How many hyphens you got, bud?
Well, you missed two, but I'm not
I'm sure
mention
I did.
Them.
Pimp Dog. I forgot
let's
about that.
Let's just say Pimp Dog. For today, let's just say Pimp Dog.
That's hyphenated in its own self.
Exactly.
That's where my business card says. Exactly.
All in all. And everything else is
straight up Pimp Dog.
D, all the above, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, man.
And then we got my man, Lil Bro, Chris Derrick from the writing directing team, the Derrick Brothers, y'all.
Hello, people.
Producer, writer, Pimp Dog himself.
Try.
Director. Game peeps game, baby.
Exactly.
Photographer. I just had a, you know what? I didn't invite anybody to this. I didn't know if I was going to have it in time, but okay. I did a photograph that was in this show at the Los Angeles Center of Photography.
Oh, cool.
With, it's interesting because Ali LaRoy, he also has a piece.
Oh, Ali,
really? Yeah. And it was, the opening night was just this past Friday.
Gotta go.
And I think it goes for like 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. But I didn't know if I could get the print. It was a deadline to have the, they selected it off of a JPEG I sent.
Off a JPEG,
yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It was like 600 entries. They chose like 40.
What?
It was like some big photographer guy who like did the curation. So it was really cool. And I just, it was crazy because I was like, I don't know if I can get it in time. Because the stuff I did was from some actual film stuff. It wasn't digital at all. That stuff that I, from like years ago, like it was a negative that I lost, my idea was to do like a like couple negatives together, like a sandwich thing, and the main one, I didn't know where it was, so I thought I lost it like 15, 10 years ago. I ran into it over the summer, but I had the JPEG, you know, whatever, they send you a little JPEG, and I got a process, and I was like, oh, I can do this, I can do this, but I hadn't done any kind of printing, and I'd never done any printing, you know, digital printing or anything like that in years.
You're old school, real.
So
real
yeah, so yeah, so I had to go and do like the dark room shit to get it ready, and then I was like, I didn't know how to do a lot of it, so I didn't say, hey, people come, because I might have missed the deadline. And I'm like, well,
you come down here, Chris.
Where's your art? Guess what? You're not even there. So, but yeah, people should check it out.
That's what's up. Good. And it goes. Do you know what day it goes to? Because this might not air till next week.
I think it's at least 2 weeks. I think it's
cool,
the end of the month.
Back.
Yeah, it's the place is the corner of Wilcox and Sunset. It's just like
it's
half a block
spot.
North on Wilcox.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. It's
that's
real
not
close.
Too far from here, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So cool. Right. Yeah, I'll definitely go.
That's what's up. Wow. That's what's up. Cool. Well, y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. So today, if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get it in. So today we brought my I can't even speak straight. Today I brought my man in here today. We figured we'd talk about some craft shit today. Number one, we thought we'd go back to some Q&A questions. I get a lot of questions and stuff from people all over the world, you know, asking us, of course, how to fucking break in, which drives me bananas.
Oh, Christ.
But trust me, we're here still trying to figure it out. And
let me know when I break in.
I mean, you can have some successes, but it don't mean you broke in.
Employed is not broke in.
No.
That's the first rule.
Correct.
You need to get in your head. It's just being sequentially employed does mm-hmm. not mean you broken in. Broken mm-hmm. in means somebody says Jeff Thorne, and there's 10 people at the table who are pros in the business, mm-hmm. and 7 of them go, oh, I know that guy's work.
Correct.
You've broken it.
Yeah.
Anything less than
and
that.
And look, and there's a little fear there. Because yeah, they're like, oh, shit, he's going to get the job.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, you never know if they even like you.
Right.
Like you honestly don't know, and you don't know if there's things that you're doing that are upsetting people or are like, just because certain modes of behavior that you do, that some people respond to, some people don't.
From right.
And then you're like, you don't know. And then, mm-hmm. you know, everyone's fucking two-faced, so they don't tell right. you, I don't like you anyway.
Mm-hmm. Only two?
So mm-hmm.
they'd be yeah. all in your face smiling.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's like people we know. A lot of people we know.
Look,
a lot of people I used to know.
Because, like, here's the funny thing. So your brother asked me the other day. He said, Hill, do you think there's anybody in L.A.? No, he said something about, like, what do you think people think of you at the Writers Guild?
Of
like,
me,
like me. He said, "What do you think people? What do you think is your is people's perception of you?" And I had to think about it for a second, and I said, "You know, I think all in all I do is positive things there, especially at that guild.
Right?
You know, I'm on fucking 5 committees for God's sake.
Right?
And I said, so I don't think anybody can say anything negative about me about anything that I do or say or try to help or promote or anything in any kind of way. Because
mm-hmm.
I know I'm the first dude. I'm one of those guys where if, like, I'm at the education committee and they're putting it together, a subcommittee for some new panel, I'm the first one going, I'll help.
Right.
You know, motherfucker, I work the front desk.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
I'm down.
So,
I'm
yeah. Right. You know, whenever you need me, I'm there, right? And so in that aspect, I don't think there's anything anybody could say. I never try to overpower anybody or try to make it look like I'm better than them. I'll pull young writers aside and be like, I heard you when you said, oh, I'm just a caucus member. You know what I mean? I'm like, you're fucking here too.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You earned it. Something you did got you here.
Don't self-deprecate yourself.
Don't self-deprecate yourself.
That's not even the right word, but don't self-denigrate yourself.
Yeah, that too. I'll take them both.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's something I think about a lot too. You know, I think that there's a lot of people at the guild who respected my efforts on doing mm-hmm. a lot of things. I mean, like even before.
Is DGA or WGA? At
WGA.
Okay.
Because even before I was, you know, like one of the 5 co-chairs in the mm-hmm. previous incarnation of the book, Coming Back Writers, I mean, there were several people who asked me to run for the board. You know, I mean, like, it was mm-hmm. Glenn Mazars, David mm-hmm. Goodman, there's a bunch of people. I mean, you know, like Billy Ray he came to our room and he was like, can you guys just please vote? Mm-hmm. Because that's the thing we've noticed, that the black writers don't vote as much. And there's a lot of things behind that.
Sure.
You know, and they was like, who's running?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so
how do they track that?
They know.
Because
they watching me?
Well, because they know. Well,
they know who you are.
Well, they know who you are. Also, you say on your thing if you're black or white.
Oh,
or
that's
whatever,
true. So I guess.
Yeah.
I never thought about that.
They know who you are.
Don't count me, man. I don't like being counted. I like people looking at me.
Don't self-identify.
I'm just here. I'm not here for you to look at.
Wow. Yeah, but at the same time, sometimes like I'm not as I don't volunteer a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I but if anyone asks me to do anything, and I can fit in my schedule, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like the thing you asked me to do at the mm-hmm. thing at Moonlight. I mean, mm-hmm. I actually had something to do that night.
Sure.
But I felt really strongly about that movie and like supporting it. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to like give up what I had to do. I mean,
sure.
I told someone else I was going to do because that's just me. You know, yeah. I mean, I'll help anyone out who asks me. But if you're not asking me or if you know, there were some issues sometimes and I had suggested things we need to do in the committee.
Mm-hmm.
That weren't really like taken with the same kind of enthusiasm as okay. some other proposals.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, okay, you know what? There's like people that I know before I was even, a lot of people I know before I was even in the guild,
mm-hmm.
or not in the guild, but doing this kind of service that mm-hmm. I can bring in or suggest to bring in,
sure,
you know?
Sure.
And since they weren't black, it was always kind of like, mm-hmm. well, how are they going to help us? I'm like, oh, because don't they hire?
Exactly.
They hire.
I had some of the same issues on the LGBT committee, you know, where they're like, well, they're not gay. I'm like, but they're opponents of us. Yeah. Isn't that just as important? You know what I mean?
I mean, it really does boil down to, it's an interesting thing. There's a way to play it where you're just on your squad.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way to run Hollywood where you're just only in Black Hollywood.
Yeah.
And everybody you know is in Black Hollywood. And the only people you want to work with are in Black mm-hmm. Hollywood. And the only people you hire are in Black Hollywood. Mm-hmm. The only actors you ever put on your shows are in mm-hmm. Black Hollywood. Personally, I don't know why you want to self-ghettoize, but it's an option. There's an Asian version of that. There's a gay version of Correct. That. There's a female version of Correct. That, which is right now, I think, very much in ascendance.
Mm-hmm. You know, oh, massive. Which to me is definitely. Kind of like... To me, in a certain level, disappointing because I understand that women directors really need their shot. Mm-hmm. I get that. And there's so many great ones who don't get their shot. I primarily think not directing features, not TV directing television. TV I mean, also. Yeah, TV, it happens a lot, but TV I think it's also. More prevalent in features.
Yeah, there's more money.
Yeah.
Guys aren't giving up that kind of cash without a fight.
Do not.
It's not.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
and but, that's all minority groups. It's not specific to women.
But I mean. but that is something that I feel is, you know, because it's on Queen Sugar. They're all female mm-hmm. directors. That was mm-hmm. the new announcement for mm-hmm. upcoming season of Jessica Jones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, you don't like that? I think it's fair. I think it's a good counterbalance.
I think it's fair, but I also feel like there's a level of... Let's just say
mm-hmm.
Barry Jenkins
mm-hmm.
loved Jessica Jones and he wanted to come and do an episode.
Mm-hmm.
No, man, can't, you're not going to
only
hook
chicks
you.
This year.
Yeah, we're not going to hook you.
You know what? It's horrible because it's going to turn into a political show.
We'll just have to go in.
All this is attendant upon white supremacy because what it creates is. White straight male supremacy, and it doesn't mean every white straight male is part of this, but every straight white male benefits from it, whether they choose to or not. They automatically
subconsciously
benefit
from
it. Physically, yeah. whether they choose to admit it, whether mm-hmm. they work against it or mm-hmm. not, they still benefit from it. What that creates in the out groups is you have to. What my wife and I used to say, you push me more to my left as a liberal
mm-hmm.
if you are crazy right wing,
right.
because I got to really get my shields up and get mm-hmm. everything going. Right. So I actually sound more radical than I actually mm-hmm. am when I'm talking to somebody like Rush Limbaugh or somebody mm-hmm. like that because they're freaks,
mm-hmm.
right? But what that creates is this little sort of, well, it's just about us, it's for us, by us. That's a legitimate way to go.
It's fine. I mean, I get it.
But speaking as a black man who's been in this environment and mm-hmm. had to deal with very similar sorts of, no, we don't need you today,
mm-hmm.
Or really any other day, you don't need it. There's no point in you showing up. Really. I don't know why you keep coming in here, Jay.
Yeah, well,
right?
Yeah.
But if we turn into the mirror of them, then it justifies their position.
Exactly. And that's kind of my point. Because, you know, there's a really fascinating Tumblr blog called Shit Said to Female Directors. And it's all these women who... I think it's been on for like 18 months.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's so fascinating about what the fuck they go through. And it's actually horrible.
Yeah, it is.
And so I really believe they're... You know, there should be that. There should be a, you know what, we should have a certain amount that we're going to do. Or we're going to have something where, like, maybe like Jessica Jones or Queen Sugar. I mean, that's their prerogative.
Well, what about Donald Glover's Atlanta?
Yeah, I was just about to say Atlanta did it with Black.
Entire staff is Black writers of a show about life in Black Atlanta.
Yeah.
I mean, look, that makes sense for that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it really does. Yeah. I mean, but I don't.
I guess my thing is this, though. There's for them to take Jessica Jones and what's the other one you just mentioned?
Atlanta?
The female.
Oh, Queen Sugar?
Queen Sugar. For them to take those two shows, it might be one more, maybe, right? Mm-hmm. For them to take those one, two, or three shows doesn't even remotely affect how many
doesn't
men
change,
still get
I know.
Right.
It doesn't
I know.
Change
you know
the status
I mean?
Quo. But it, what it does
real.
Do,
what's that?
And here's the problem, again, it all goes back to the original sin mm-hmm. of white supremacy, male, straight, white male supremacy. What it does is a bunch of directors who would not normally get those first few or that next two or three that they need
mm-hmm.
to keep moving, certainly in the TV realm, because mm-hmm. it really is about what's your resume at some
sure.
point. When you're starting a new show and you're looking at reels and you're looking at resumes, mm-hmm. you don't even get to the reels until after you see the resume.
True.
So if I look at a woman's name,
I may not care. I personally don't, by the way. If you can go, you can go. I don't care what your gender is. I don't care if you're in a wheelchair. I don't care if you came in on stilts. As long as you're asking direct, I want you.
Right.
But, but if I'm looking at a set of resumes before I look at the reels and I see, well, person X has worked on all these different shows and they keep bringing them back on that show so I know they're dependable and blah, 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 blah. Okay, put them in the to-be-considered pile. And then I see a person whose resume looks like they just got out of school. They might be great, but it's my first show.
Yeah,
I'm not risking my first show on that new person.
I get black, that on white, the first female, show. On the first show, I get that.
So with Queen Sugar and with now with Jessica Jones, there's a bunch of female directors that are going to get their second and third chits. They're going to get their third and fourth chits. And they're going to be seen to have been reliable because they were
right,
back.
Right.
So even though in the aggregate, it's still mostly straight white males directing everything. Yeah, yeah. Everything. these particular few are going to have at least that more of a leg up. It's created by white supremacy, this backlash against it. I think sometimes it goes a bit far from every corner. I've been around black folks who are like really aggressively black about all of their shit. Yeah. And I'm like, but like you said, but that guy is great and could hire you down the line. Why would you? Okay. You know?
This is all still, although it's got a little political, it still fits within your thing about breaking in because it's like you really got to figure out these methods. Like there's a friend of mine, she's a development executive, and she mentioned this director named Vic Mahoney.
Okay.
And she did a movie, I can't remember what it was called, but it starred Zoe Kravitz. Okay. And I don't think the movie has gotten released yet. But I saw part of it on YouTube, somebody bootleg and shit like that. But she got a chance to do an episode of Queen Sugar.
Okay.
And it's like, you know, and you're right. I mean, there's that resume thing becomes an issue. I mean, I remember this woman named Kimberly Pierce, who did Boys Don't Cry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, and I was sitting around like, what is she going to do next? And it's this long gap. And it's like, I know you're trying to work.
Right.
I know you are. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, there's a lot of things that are going on. I mean, there's a movie that was out earlier this year called Tallulah that was on...
it's on Netflix.
Netflix, right? Yeah. And I remember the woman, the director, she was saying, you know, to get money is difficult because we'd go meet these venture capitalists, or not venture, but these money people on Wall Street. And there's this whole stigma that women don't know how to handle money.
Right.
So therefore, you're going to blow my money on this extra risky business anyway.
And it becomes riskier because somehow when you're on the set, your womanliness is going to make things screw up in some random way. I don't get it.
And also, this goes back to what you were saying earlier before we got on about... Is she going to scream at people on the set?
Right.
Now,
or cry.
Cry. Poor lady that can't direct.
No,
what?
But you know what? People do cry on set. When shit goes bad, I don't care who you are. Sure. You might be fucked. Because you know, if you fuck up in your movie, you might not be directing ever again.
True.
You know? And you might have to start back way back and do these million-dollar films, whatever it is, to build your resume. But you have to do maybe two or three of those just to, like, move the stink off of what you did when you fucked up.
Movie jail. You got to get out of movie jail.
Which, you know, totally. Director jail is totally.
Sucks.
Yeah. But the point we're saying is about, you know, screaming on the set, yelling on the set. I don't like to scream on the set for a couple of reasons. One, I don't feel that it's productive to motivate people the right way. Two, there was somebody, I want to say it's Martin Ritt. Mm-hmm. Okay, Martin Ritt is the old director. I think his big movie that everyone knows, he did Hombre, and he did this great movie. He broke with Paul Newman a lot. HUD. Okay,
yeah.
So when Paul Newman did one of the very, very first Inside the Actors Studios, which I think people should go see the earlier ones, like before it became a thing, because they had all these great, great actors in there who were very... Because before it was a thing, just people like you know...
Right, real G's
like
would show
up. People on there, yeah, like, you know, Shelley Winters and people who like... You know, then it became this, I gotta be on because I gotta check that box. But...
whatever.
But Paul Newman was saying...
It became the Oprah show.
Yeah.
Again, whatever.
So he was talking about, he was like, you know, Martin Ritt would do this thing, I think it was him, where he would say action in the tone he wanted the scene to play.
Oh, that's cool.
Huh, interesting.
So when it's like a soft scene, he'd be like, action. Or we're just going to be charged. But action, right. You know, because that, he controls it. Mm-hmm. And if you're screaming all the time, you're like, what are you doing to your voice? Note. It's all one note, and you can't. And then
that's interesting. It's almost like a director as conductor rather than director as boss or overseer. But that's your job.
So this really cool guy named Carol Reed, director, his big, big movie is Third Man.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that your job as a director is to focus the audience's attention in every shot. Hmm. That's what you do. So you know if you're not, so you can hold a shot longer if I'm not, if I don't need to change your attention.
Which is what?
Barry Jenkins. Nice. Nice. Because you're cutting around all the time. Well, why are you cutting around? I mean, you don't do that.
Unless there's a reason to do
that. There's a reason, right.
If what's her name? Scorsese's editor, who famously was like, we can't get this exact sequence right. And she just goes, rah, spins the dials. And then whatever what came up was, yes, that. It needs to be like that.
Mm.
But you need to know that you can do that at that moment. That editor needs to know, watch this. Brat. You know? So I think... What I think is the break-in thing, people find their squad.
Mm-hmm.
Your squad could be your ethnic group. It could be your gender group. It could be your sexuality group. It could be your religious group, whatever it is. Understanding that the larger part of quote-unquote Hollywood, which doesn't really exist, I think, the way people have it in their heads, it isn't really the four families getting together and talking about it. It's not. It's much more diffuse than that. But the...
isn't there a seance in some shit? Or?
There's some back room that I never get to go to.
The Magic Castle's got that little secret room.
Okay.
Glory hole.
But eventually, that little area will, for most people who really want to work, it will become confining.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably best to have that squad be your sort of maybe your core support group, but that when you're out in the world, you're just in the world, open to things.
Because you have to figure out. To me, what the thing that I gravitate to is people who are into the type of material that I'm into, because then they can critique your stuff in a way that someone else can't, and also. You know, people will recommend you. Like, you know, like if I'm writing on, you know, or I like Dark Matter, let's just say, and I gotta go, and I need someone to come on here. I probably know five other people who I read and I like. Oh, you need to talk to so and so. But that's not to say you again self-ghettoize yourself, because you can figure out ways. You know, two big people. I know the story. Janine Sherman Barwa, who's big, who's huge on Criminal Minds. Mm-hmm. But people forget, like, she used to write on Jamie Foxx show.
She's a showrunner now, isn't she?
Right. Yeah. Yes. But she started off writing comedy in Jamie Foxx show.
Mm-hmm.
And the PJs, I think, is her creation. Wow. Mm-hmm. And then I want to say Matt Weiner worked on Full House or something like that.
That sounds right.
And then he, like, he wrote this Madman script, and he used that spec pilot to get on Sopranos, because he wanted to get out of, I don't want to be writing this joke crap anymore. I need to get out of it, you know. So there's a lot of ways to, like, you know,
you reinvent yourself. Sure.
Yeah, you know, and that's something you got to do all the time too. Anyway, you have to, or you should, you know, try to.
Well, you can now, which is the key. You before, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you know, when you were starting out to write,
I was by myself.
My assumption is you were. You know, a genre writer or not.
I'm a genre writer.
A comedy writer or
but
not.
But what I got back then, and it's fascinating to watch younger people, even people only 3 years, 5 years younger. My good friend Brandon Easton is a good example of that. It took me slightly less than the standard decade to get where I wanted to go. It took me about 6.5 years to get where I wanted to be.
Yeah, like how many scripts was that? Well, I know how fast.
We're not talking about that. but the thing is, I was alone. Like, I was a black face turning out material with dragons and aliens and stuff in it. And I cannot tell you the number of times someone would say, well, could it be more urban? Because my characters were not always black, or mm-hmm. there would be 2 black people and 9 Asian people, mm-hmm. whatever the story dictated, mm-hmm. right? It was always about whatever the story was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that I was against or for white or black people. Sure. It was just, if this thing takes place in Hong Kong in 1823, mm-hmm. not a lot of brothers running around Hong Kong in 1823. Yeah. So, but what would happen is a script would get me a meeting. I'd go in, my name, literally the way my name mm-hmm. is spelled.
It looks
is
British.
A British like spelling, mm-hmm. right? So they were not expecting the face that they got. And I would say about 50% of the time, there'd be this sort of lean back, reassess.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that meeting. Mm-hmm. Right? I had that meeting. Oh,
yeah. Okay.
That's terrible.
It happened, I would say, a minimum of 50% of the time. Wow. And that was the strength of the material that gets you into the office.
Wow.
Right? And you're like, okay, I can sail through this meeting. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know nothing's going to come of this meeting based on that lean back, but I can't storm out now. Yeah, exactly. The meeting just started. I got to go through the whole thing.
But at that point, you also know that when the meeting is become about who you are, not the material. I mean, it's always about who you are, because I don't know if they can work with you.
That's right.
One, you got to be, can't be defensive about anything.
That's right.
But you have to, that meeting becomes where you have to play it in a way where you gotta not just present yourself, but you gotta be like defeating stereotypes.
Yeah.
And you have to imprint yourself in their mind, like, well, he's not
that one.
Yeah, yeah.
But you
he's
know
not
what?
The black guy that
you can play that, but the problem is I can't do it. I'm really shitty at schmoozing. It's always on my face when I'm lying. So I don't. I wish I could do it. It would make my life easier. But people can always say, oh, he's holding something back, right? Or he thinks something other than what he's saying. So I just don't bother with it.
Yeah.
But you don't know what particular stereotype they have in their head to work against.
I know.
Right? They might be keying to the fact that I'm physically larger than them. I have to say, I lost. Here's an interesting example. This is not as a writer, as an actor, back when I was an actor. I won't say who for.
You were a really but good actor. You're on a very good job.
I read for a particular show that had a up and coming in the sense that the media had latched onto this. A gay director producer was in charge of this particular episode, and it involved a character coming out, right? And I had auditioned and gotten on shows for this particular company a couple of times, so I was relatively familiar with the casting director and all those people. It wasn't just coming in cold and feeling all nervous. It was like, oh, cool, I get a chance to really try this part, and I was going to be playing the guy who was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a few weeks prior to that, I'd gone up for a role where I'd played a mentally handicapped person, and had almost gotten that role, which is why I was being brought back.
For this.
Mm-hmm. Right? So I walked in, and you've met me, you see how I am. It's just always this way. Okay? I walk in, and I'm like, well, thank God you guys gave me something that wasn't so hard this time.
Hmm.
Right? Now, Chris just looked at me. Yeah. Hilliard went, huh?
You said okay. What?
Because what I was thinking at that time was, I'm Joe Actor. The last part you gave me, I'm actually quite smart. I had to play a person who was mentally handicapped. He had a speech impediment and all this other stuff. And I had to
work for it.
I had to be the guy that you're listening to right now and then believably turn into this other guy in a second in front of these people. So I considered that a level of difficulty that was not.
That was a stretch.
Good point. Yeah.
The harshness of coming out to a loved one, it's rough, but it's within the realm of normal human emotion. Yeah. So I was like, oh, I'm going to knock this out of the park. Watch me kill this, right? Y'all going to believe the shit out of this, right? But I made the mistake in front of a gay man under all of these conditions of that time, saying what I'm about to do, I don't find to be that difficult. I did not get that part. And I could see the light go out of the person's eye. I could see them lean back. But there was no way. I couldn't take it back. I couldn't address it. Yeah. There was nothing I could say or do. And in theory, and technically, I hadn't done anything wrong because I was speaking as an actor about the difference between 2 complex parts. You can't know what the other person on the other side of the desk is going to land on.
Oh, exactly. Right?
Well, in essence, you were talking to the casting director.
Right.
To some extent, you weren't talking to him.
Right, but he was in the room.
But he was in the room.
Right.
I understand your point.
And the point being is that if you're worried about the other person's stereotypical viewpoint or their political viewpoint or whatever the hell it is, you're slightly off your game, mm-hmm. which is to be you, mm-hmm. right? You got to make them want you because they're going to, like you said, they're going to be stuck with you for a minimum of 10 days to, depending on whatever the job is, for a while.
Yeah. Well, yeah, acting, yeah. I mean, if you're writing, this could be the whole season. But right. the thing I was saying is that the lean back, that you know you're not going to get that meat, that it's just...
It's over.
It's... Yeah, it's just you're being polite at that mm-hmm. point.
Yep.
Both mm-hmm. sides are being polite. Now, so you could go, oh, you know, I'm black and don't think I can write this, so I'm out, peace.
Oh, I get it. I see where we are here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I wonder what would have happened if I'd done that back then.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I look back, maybe some of those situations might have been made better by that reaction.
Yeah, I mean, there's different ways to play it, you know? I mean, it's just so... But again, you know, that... There's a lot of it that's... I remember something that my brother and I took a while to get through is that, you know, we would send a script to someone and they would say, come in for a meeting. And this is like before we had an agent and stuff like this. And even with our first agent, because it was a really small place and he was relatively new, it's... they don't want to do the script when they when they call you in on the script. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
And I don't think a lot of people know that. They That's like true. What
people sign thinking, oh, they're gonna go sell the script. They're like, we like the writing.
No, we like the writing. Exactly. And we want you to talk to us about other stuff. Mm-hmm.
What else you got?
What else you got?
That's the biggest phrase. You know what else you got?
And that's a really trick phrase too. I mean, that's something that for a while we were doing that, and we would have other stuff we work on, blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. But what I learned is that's the wrong play. The wrong play is, what do you guys have in development?
Right, because I could hook into that.
That yeah. we'd be good for.
Mm-hmm.
I know you guys got something.
You got mm-hmm. a stack of stuff.
You guys,
right?
there's 50 scripts right there in behind your desk. Mm-hmm. Because that's really what they want to do. Because it kind of goes into the salesman type of game where you can't sell someone something that you want to sell. You have to sell them something that they want to buy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and that's the whole thing about. Well, what do you have in development that, you know, it works that way? Because mm-hmm. I remember one time we were in this meeting, and the woman really liked this script. She asked, what else do you have? And we were going through stuff and blah, blah, blah. She was interested. And I said to her, so what do you guys are interested in doing? What are you doing? And she was like, oh, I have this book. This Ursula Le Guin book, Two Faces, was it?
Was The Left Hand of Darkness?
The Left Hand of Darkness. She was like, yeah.
encyclopedia.
can you guys read this? Because we're interested in doing a take on it. We want to see what your take is. You know?
Oh, wow. How long ago was that?
10 years ago.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough, right?
It's still
that's a tough. Yet. That's a tough book to crack.
No, very tough. Because, you know, because what it is, it's like, I believe it's like it's a world where men become women.
Gender is entirely fluid.
It's entirely fluid. And so that's like, you know, somewhat crazy. And they were talking. This is actually interesting. It's an interesting viewpoint of what they were to cast. They were mm-hmm. like, oh, you know, we could get Denzel. And then he's going to transform into Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Denzel ain't doing that part. I promise you he won't show up. Yeah, Denzel's not doing that. So I promise you he won't show up. He might say he's going to show up.
But he ain't going to show up.
He won't be there, I promise you.
But it's that type of movie, that type of story where it's like, you know, how do you get someone who's a major actor to sign on to...
Right.
To
Johnny Depp might do it.
Now, yeah.
But even then, I don't even... because I think the role in the story becomes better once you're the woman. So then... Who do you get as the man who has enough
take a secondary? Who's not really?
Yeah, so it's tricky, you know.
Real world politics.
You know, that's.
Let's answer some of these questions.
Okay, let's go.
Some of these are very generic.
Viewer mail.
Exactly. All right, in no particular order. So here we go. What's the most enjoyable thing about screenwriting for you? We'll start with you, Jeff.
I always wanted to be one, mm-hmm. a writer of some kind. I am a writer of some kind. I think for me, because I really leaned hard towards TV and mm-hmm. not film, I think one of the most enjoyable things is when I write it, I know I'm going to see it. Mm. I know within a few weeks at most mm-hmm. What I put down on the page some actors are going to be doing
mm-hmm.
Is immediate. My hands are on it. I've been lucky to work with showrunners who let you really produce your show. Mm-hmm. So that means you're really there. You're mm-hmm. with them all the way through production. You get to rewrite on the fly mm-hmm. if you need to.
Post and everything.
Everything, right mm-hmm. down to the end. And in a weird way, it's that part of it, the sort of, hey, kids, let's put on a show part of it, which I think a lot of people forget as they get into their careers. They forget that's why they got into it. Mm-hmm. I like being on a set. I like being around the people that make the other things. I like going into the prop mm-hmm. areas and talking to the wardrobe people and getting with the actor about some weird nuance. Can we put the comma further back in the sentence? Because then that'd allow me to power up for this mm-hmm. other. All of that stuff. Me being a writer allows, that's my key into that room. Mm-hmm. Everyone has this, like, this great party going mm-hmm. on, but you can't get in unless you get your key. Mm-hmm. My key opens one door that lets me into the party, and it is the writing. Also, especially for screenwriting, a lot of crazy stuff that maybe you don't want to waste a novel on. Sure. Like, you don't want to get in that deep. You know, it's not that thick.
Can I ask you a quick question just in regard to that?
Yeah.
Now, you and I are the same. We came from acting, and now mm-hmm. we're writers. Do you, I find for me, and I don't mean to interrupt, you was about to get into your thought, just keep your thought. I find that, and I've never been a series regular on a show. I've recurred mm-hmm, on a couple mm-hmm. shows, but I've never been a series regular. So I don't know what it's like to be every single week doing the show. Now, so my question for you is this. What makes me so happy about being a writer is, when I first started writing and I wrote Fade In, I was like, that's the feeling I get when I'm standing there on a TV show next to Blair Underwood. That's the feeling I got when I was, you know what I mean, sitting in my trailer. Yeah. You know what I mean? I constantly, still to this day, whenever I write, I still feel the exact same excitement about it. You know what I mean? And I'm 15, 16 years in now.
When I write a book, I feel that way. Mm-hmm. But when I write comics or for screen, I really feel like I'm an architect more so than a writer. Hmm. I don't get that surge you're talking about mm-hmm. until we wrap post.
Hmm. Because not even fade out.
No, because I am writing a blueprint that I'm going to hand off to a bunch of other people, and hopefully I'll get to stay. In features, you don't, but in TV, you can get to stick around. Mm-hmm. So I'm the beginning of a procedure that's going to end in a piece of artwork. I'm the beginning of a procedure that's going to end in a piece of artwork. Mm-hmm. And when that artwork is complete, which means actors and sound and makeup and freaking locations and everything, when it's mm-hmm. finally complete, then I lean back and I go, holy crap, that came out of my head.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Chris?
Well, screenwriting is very... There's not much enjoyable about it. and two reasons. Mm-hmm. Because one, the initial joy I get is like the initial idea. Mm. And how it's like, and that's like the pure idea in my head. Or when my brother and I are talking and it's like, this would be cool. Mm-hmm. And then everything you do when you're putting on the paper is like, it's never really living up to the main idea.
No way. Yeah.
But I constantly go back to the main idea to be refreshed to like it. Mm-hmm. But because I come from a photography background, mm-hmm. it's what you said. It's about shooting. It's all about shooting. You know, to me, there's nothing more invigorating than just being on set. I mean, it's something you saw the other day when we were shooting the thing. Yeah. So simple. We were just shooting a little scene in the office next door. Okay. And, you know, and my younger brother was like, he tweeted this thing home to my parents. He was like, yeah, we did this thing. And it's the first time I've seen Chris happy out here. Because it's like, that's the only time.
He's only happy once we say action. But leading up, he's like, when the fuck are we going to shoot this?
That's interesting because my wife, I've done this last year, even though I left the show The Librarians, which is premiering for its third season tonight. I'm not part of The Librarians no more, y'all. I left, okay? But she would come in sometimes and see me working and be like, how come you're not happy? Because when we first started out and I was writing for free, mm-hmm. trying to get my stories across, she says, you don't seem happy when I'm looking at you. And I'm like, what you're expecting can't really happen at this stage of the job, right?
Explain it to the kids.
I'm not sitting here sort of third eyeing myself going, dig me, I'm a writer, here mm-hmm. I am writing, isn't this great, this one moment I mm-hmm. wrote and all that kind of stuff. It isn't even as specific as, wow, I like this particular actress and she's about to say these lines and I know she's mm-hmm. going to kill it. My producer brain goes, homegirl about to kill this. We're going to get an Emmy, mm-hmm. you know, like that. Right. But never get Emmys. You don't, if there's a dragon in it genre. And it's not Game of Thrones, you ain't getting no Emmys.
Logan Dan ain't even nominated. Right? So you know
so,
that's some bullshit.
But I do think that this the part of the process where you're making is when it becomes most interactive. Mm-hmm. So like when I'm home alone with a novel idea, I'm the whole novel. I'm God. Mm-hmm. But you're not God on a screen on when you're writing a screenplay. You're mm-hmm. one of many angels.
Yeah, good point.
You know, even a director on a feature, unless they're gigantic, still has to answer to somebody.
Sure.
Yeah. It's. I mean, the thing about directing a feature. Someone was saying this the other day, and it makes a lot of sense. Is why there's so much stress and pressure to get the script so good. It's that they were saying that once you get the green light, everyone else is hostage to the director and the actors.
Yeah.
And they can't do anything at that mm-hmm. point.
Unless they drop an A-bomb and fire you and start over. Well, or something.
But at that point, it rarely happens. But at that point, if they bring in a new director, then they're just. We want a new hostage taker. There's a new kidnapper.
We need a new kidnapper.
I don't think. That was interesting to me to hear from someone in development say that's how they think. Mm-hmm. And I think that filmmakers look at it as just give us that shot to be there to like. Like you said earlier, it's like being the conductor. Because mm-hmm. see, I think in television you are the boss. It's more like the foreman where you gotta like, because you gotta get so much shit done every day.
Directing on TV is a wildly different job than directing
it's,
for features.
It's like, you know, the machine is like it's like you're putting the house up and you got 3 days. It was gonna, you know, whatever the fuck it is. You
and it's this house.
Yeah.
Don't build an extra room. I don't want a basement when there was no basement in the plant.
I'm not going to come back and shoot on day 15. We're going to come back. We're going to redo this scene because we have time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. None you build this house
so,
quickly.
So it's wildly different. So, yeah. So that's that.
Okay. Let's next move question. On to the next one. So what sort of stories excite you and why?
Well, right now, the stories that excite me are stories that I feel look at humanity in a way that is kind of exciting to me in terms of what they're going through emotionally. Mm-hmm. Like, really has something that resonates with me.
Like, you give them an example.
So right now, I'm not going to say who the person is, but mm-hmm. I told you the script I'm working this mm-hmm. old. It's not
about. Well, is there? Can I take it a step further? Is there an example of a movie or a TV show that tells the type of stories you wish you could do?
All right. So I just caught up and watched. I'm watching Westworld. I watched 3 episodes mm-hmm. in the last.
Right.
So I'm still behind. I'm six.
Yeah, oh, y'all in for a treat.
But what I really like about Westworld is, and I didn't notice when I was watching the pilot, I liked it, but Westworld like has this thing where it's talking about, what it's like to be God, mm-hmm. and also there's a big theory about, you know, are you living your life to the fullest, and have you. And is there something, you know, the last one I was watching, like issue six, there's this conversation between Evan Rachel Wood and this guy, I don't remember his name, this actor. And this like this whole thing about what's the path you're on. And you get this sense of has she wasted part of her life? Mm-hmm. And therefore, is she now trying to seize the day in a sense, you know? Yeah. And I really like that now for me because, you know, I'm older now, and I mm-hmm. and there's certain things that I haven't done, certain things I still want to do. You know, there's a lot right when I look back wistfully, like, and I can say to myself, there were times where I was wasting time, mm-hmm. you know. And I was just reading this book,
the dialogue one or something.
No, this book by Robert Greene, the 33 strategies of war, mm-hmm. right? And there's just one of the strategies 5 or 6 is, you know, be on the death ground. Right, put yourself in the death ground, mm-hmm. and they give a story about Dostoevsky when he was like 25. He joined this radical group that then got arrested by the czar, and they were all
holy crap.
Talking about, oh, well, we're in jail for 6 months, and what happens usually is we're in jail for 6 months, and then we get sent to hard labor camp for like a year. That's what usually happens.
Sure.
These guys were, after they were in jail for 9 months, and then they were pulled out, and they were brought up to this firing squad.
Because the czar wasn't playing. Yeah,
they were all in the firing squad, and they were like, this can't be happening. Yeah. We can't be getting killed, because who the hell happened? And then,
that's not how it works.
You know, and they're all tied up and masks on their heads and the troops, and then the last second, they get the reprieve. Mm. And then he got like 4 years in Siberia, and then he did 4 years in the Russian army. But they were saying that when he was in Siberia, and he wasn't allowed to write anything because he was like writing all his propaganda shit. Mm-hmm. He wrote some of his famous novels in his head and just memorized them. So when he got out, and he was writing, he wrote his brother when he got in the army. He was like, I can't waste any more time.
Got to hurry up and write this.
I got to write now. I got to get done what I want to get done. It's not like being a writer is not this leisurely thing where I can sit mm-hmm. back and kick it in a salon and mm-hmm. have fun. And it's like, so The Idiot and Dostoevsky, you know, and Crime and Punishment and Brothers Karamazov is like memorize books.
Wow.
Before he had a chance to write them. Yeah.
That's like John McCain building his house neighborhood in his house when he was a POW.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Built a whole neighborhood in his head to keep from going nuts.
Yeah. So,
it's pretty cool.
That's that.
What about you?
What
stories excite you?
Things that excite me. I got into writing because of Star Trek and because of comic books and because of Ursula Le Guin's A Wizard of Earthsea. Mm. I like stories that take me places that I can't walk to or fly to. Mm. I've lived around the world a lot. I grew up in several different countries. Spent like
you're a military kid?
No, just the child of a crazy man. I saw a lot of the U.S. Very early. It's a big old world, and it's got a lot of interesting stories in it. I love all the stories. I feel all those stories belong to me as a human. We share. Every single one of us owns everything. Mm-hmm. I own Einstein, and I own Hitler. Mm-hmm. I own both of them. Yeah. Okay? But there's so many stories that are inside people's heads that you're like, what? And it can be a horror story, it can be a romance, it can be whatever, as long as it takes me to a place that I can't get by myself. Mm-hmm. And I can get a lot of places by myself, so it really has to be something. So,
so you truly liked a world build, that's for sure.
I liked. Here's a good example. There's a bunch of people. My old boss and I are kind of friends, Chris Downey. Mm-hmm. We had a weird day where it was just us, and the day was like a weird, like 2/3 of a day. There were no other writers. Mm-hmm. I was there to
everybody
get some
was
notes
right.
Or everybody was out or something, and I was there for no reason too. I just happened. He's like, you know what? Screw this. Let's go to the movies.
Oh, really?
What's up? What's playing? And we went to see Cloud Atlas.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I love that movie.
Right. Yeah. I fucking love Cloud Atlas. Mm-hmm. Okay, but a lot of people didn't. And so prior to me going to see it, all I'd heard was all this negative buzz. Mm-hmm. I go to see this movie and I'm just like,
it's still standing.
This is like the greatest independent movie you've ever seen in your life.
And you'll ever see.
You will ever see in your life with shitloads of money under it so it can be done right.
Yeah, that's why you'll never see the movie.
You'll never see it.
That was like $170 million like independent film.
Really? It is the craziest, greatest movie. And I watch it and I'm like, how is this all this shit going to tie together? Because I'm a little irritated. Like, I could see why people checked out because their attention spans are low. Okay. And they get to a point in the movie where, like, all right, this is all very interesting. How the fuck does all this shit tie together? Well, you better wrap this shit up. Mm-hmm. But when they do wrap it up.
I mean, look, the structure of that is so crazy. And I read the book. I don't mean to interrupt you, but the book is different.
That's what I hear.
The book is set up in a way where each story is told.
It's discreet.
And it goes to a climax point and then stops. And then jumps to the next.
That's aggravating.
And it jumps forward to history, and then it meets in the middle for that final story when Tom Hanks was the older guy
and he
was with Halle Berry in the future.
Right, right.
Like that's the middle story, the middle of the book. And then they do something, and then it then backtracks and tells the
rest of the story.
It closes. The closing.
Now I
got to
read that book. That's awesome.
And so when I read the book, I was like, no way this is the movie, because no one would really sit down and, because you wouldn't be able to.
You couldn't do it.
You fuck with everyone too strongly. And
as it was, it still fuck with people too strongly.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about a powerful story and why I like them. Mm-hmm. when you get to the end, if you have the balls to go through that movie, because it isn't a struggle. It's just you've been conditioned to like a movie a particular way. And the way that movie went, it kept leading you to believe it was this kind of movie. And it's really this other kind of movie, right? So when I get to the end of it, it was like someone invited you over to what you thought was like a beat up, down and out taco shack somewhere, and then they start bringing out all this like fine Mexican cuisine and
specialized like,
dancing
shit
girls and merengue and you know, all this shit's going on. And at the end of the meal, you feel like in Los Angeles for the from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock, somebody took your ass to Old Mexico for real, and then said, "Okay, that's for you. You don't even need to leave a tip, honey. Just go on with your day." So stories like that, stories that even stories that try to do that and don't always make it. There's some movies that have reached for that and don't quite make it. I love them more than the one that just goes right down the middle and hits it hard.
Well, yeah, those movies that are I mean, those movies that are beautiful failures in a sense. They're amazing because see, to me, that's the power of cinema that television doesn't do. Television can't do that because television, if someone did some shit like that on TV,
old school TV can't do it. Modern TV could do it. Think about Westworld.
All right. I'll see it at the end. But Westworld. That's arguably like a $300 million investment.
Yeah,
and so therefore that's not most television. You know.
Well, let me tell you, friend.
We'll see.
Just as a thought experiment, it's not so much that the money spent; it's that the stories that TV is what we call TV. It's really Netflix and the web and all that stuff. That's what smaller entertainment, physically smaller entertainment. The stories they're willing to try to tell now are completely divorced from what they used to because TV is really about selling products.
Yeah.
It's not Netflix is the product is the show.
So, right. That's true. I mean, that's true. I mean, speaking of Cloud Atlas, because they did the Wachowskis did that Sense8 show.
I love Sense8.
Which is an amazing show and that no one was talking about because it's.
Which one is it?
It's called Sense8. Sense8. Netflix. Yeah. Because again, it's a similar type of thing where.
Ballsy.
And it's so ballsy. This thing is 12 episodes. I watched the first 7 in the first 3 weeks that it came out, and I was like, I can't watch any more of this. It's like it's so complicated for me. I was like, what the hell's going on? I was like, I love what's happening, but not enough is happening right now. And it's at a weird time in my life. We're getting ready to shoot Architects of Crime. Okay. So then I was like, I'm gonna come back and watch the rest of it later. And then the next episode, it all came together.
Right.
And I was like, oh shit, I should just watch one more.
I
would have been in for the rest.
Because
there was like that one episode, I think it was episode 8, maybe it's episode 7. Where everything came about what the show was trying to do. And the minute I got that, I was like, this is fucking cool. And I burned through the next 4 in like 2 days.
That's exactly right.
And I'm not someone to binge watch television. And you're right. I mean, look, I'll agree with you. Like, to me, most things that I have to do is things that take me to places that that aren't the world that I live in. And because I've been a lot of places in the world, too, like you, it's like things that are outside of America's comfort zone are way more fascinating to me.
Right.
But those stories don't sell a lot over here unless you're a certain type of certain type of individual.
Right.
And it's exponentially harder if you're black.
and then adding gay or adding female.
Like that,
and
it's just like keeps wildly, wildly. Yeah. But you know, but it's like
look at Sense8.
That show.
You can't believe it, Hilliard.
I think I watched the pilot.
There's scenes in that show. I was reading how they shot this shit where I was like, from just a production point of view, you're fucking with people.
Yeah.
Because it's 8 different people who are 8 different cities in the world.
Mm-hmm. Different continents.
Different continents. And they have this ability to interact with each other. Mm-hmm. Like on this,
directly interact.
Directly. So they would do scenes where there's a German guy who's talking with, he's sitting in the rain in a courtyard in Germany, and the woman he's talking to is in Mumbai, and it's sweaty.
Yeah, daytime, sweaty.
What happened is, so she'll be in his part, and they'll both be wet because it's raining. And then, the camera will just cut to the over shoulder, and then you're in Mumbai finishing the conversation that you shot maybe
months previous.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And then they still got to be wet again because he's still wet because he's wet where he is.
So their continuity and their continuity is
off. They came to play. Shame. They came to play.
And that's a really good show. I mean, people haven't seen it. If you
have to watch
go
it.
Through up to episode 8 and then just be like, and then you just be like, I'm in. And there's a part in Mexico.
Think you need to go that far. I think what it is is that the thesis of Sense8 is we're all in this together.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. If you can't get anything else out of Sense8, you don't get that out of Sense8, you need to not watch any more television. Okay. Because they might as well hit you in the face with a hammer that says we're all in this together. But I think a lot of people's criticism, I know for the earlier episodes, is what the hell is the actor storyline part of this
film? Mm-hmm.
Right.
I see all these other interesting lives, but I know what an actor's life is. Right. And I'm not going to spoil anything for you all. Every one of these characters has a secret that is known to the people who they're able to communicate with, whether they wish to know it or not. The actor definitely has a big secret.
Mm-hmm.
But in the scheme of sort of, this is almost like a techno thriller, sci-fi thriller type tone, you're kind of like, okay, that's a secret.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I'm making a weird face. That's a weird secret, but does it stack up against all these other crazy secrets?
Sure.
And then like the African dude with the bus, why is he involved? Why do we care about him? I can see an average viewer asking those questions.
I
trust that the writer production team, Straczynski and the Wachowski brothers, when I see their names on something, I'm like, I may not always like where you take me, mm-hmm. but I know you know where we're going. And that trust of creator gets me through a moment where I might not get what they're doing. I don't know if the average audience member gives people that benefit.
They don't. They really don't. I mean, there's the other guy involved in it is Tom Twyker, the director who did Cloud Atlas
That's
with them.
So funny.
And he did,
I'm keying to the writing and the production side, and you're keying to the director.
No. The reason why is because I know, you know, I'm watching that thing and they're saying that I'm like, okay, these guys directed it, and the third episode is done by Tom Twyker. I'm like, well, that's their boy.
Right.
And they spent all the time together doing Cloud Atlas
right.
and some other shit. And, you know, and he I love from like International and from
He directed the International,
yeah, and Run Lola Run and Perfume. So he's a fucking fantastic director.
Run Lola Run.
And because he gets them as writers and people, mm-hmm. then I know it's more. It's not just like a director we brought in. It's like their boy,
right.
who's really part of the camp and understands
and
how to make it work.
And also that episode he came in on is probably one, let him loose on this episode.
Yeah. Right. But because his technique is styled differently. And then the Mexican guy, his storyline is so fascinating. It's like, you have to see it. I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, you can't spoil
I don't spoil There's that moment in like later on the episodes when they're in that museum in Mexico City. It's like where Diego Rivera put up his donated mm-hmm. little stuff. It's just like, it's so touching. It's so like, this is what stories should be doing. Like, find a way to let us know why our humanity is.
So that's what you connect to.
That's what I connect
you
to.
You can't
like,
not.
Ultimately, you have to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you have to find. That's what I'm saying. But you got to find a moment that, I mean, whatever it is that lets you do the humanity like view. And I think that what you're saying is with me too. Like fiction, science fiction, fantasy type of stuff. That stuff strips away a lot of other kind of things that would distract people.
Yeah.
And it allows you to focus in on an element that I really want to hit harder.
One of the things about this thing, it is a science fiction piece. It's a straight up science fiction piece. They haven't really over the... One thing I will spoil for you, mm-hmm. although you think you know...
Isn't it over a year ago?
Whatever. I'm saying for you specifically. I'm talking to you, Hilliard. Hill dog.
You can tell me.
I'm not spoiling this for you, though, because it's sort of a half a spoiler, which is... You're going to, at the end of the first season, think you know how it works, but they really never actually explain it.
They don't.
Okay?
They don't.
You feel like you know, because mm-hmm. you've seen how the characters in the show have sort of figured out a way to make the thing work for them,
mm-hmm.
but you need season two. You have to come back for season
two. Well, because they introduced in like episode 10 or 11,
there's
another
a third party,
group,
right?
And you're like, oh! Oh shit! You're like, wait a minute, which episode's left? So
let's go. But getting into writing of books and stuff, most recently there's been this whole. It's fascinating with the whole rise of Trump and the sort of what they're calling the white lash. Mm-hmm. Like all the people who weren't straight white males are getting the crap kicked out of us for centuries, and in the last. Literally in my lifetime, so in the last 40 plus years, mm-hmm. a great many of those legal barriers, those social barriers, have been either knocked down or cut in half. or by a lot. A lot where you can see the field on the other side of the wall. Right? So there's a huge backlash. In the writing of science fiction, that backlash took the form of a bunch of people going, where are all these gay people and women and non-whites writing all, getting all these awards? We should be writing stuff about, you know, John Carter, Warlord of Mars. And it's like, they're mad about it. But one of the things that's happened in sci-fi for years that I think people of color have always been bugged by is, let's say you have a great writer who wants to discuss a particular social ill. Mm-hmm. They always used a proxy alien. They always put a white person on the alien of the asparagus people, sure. the world of the asparagus people, and the asparagus people had a problem with racial discrimination mm-hmm. because the dark green asparagus people really didn't like the light green or the greenish yellow asparagus people. And like, y'all talking about apartheid, right? Why don't you just talk about apartheid? You know, and from the point of view of the black reader, it's like, why are you making this leap? Just talk about the thing. The thing is interesting enough, right? Write a science fiction story about the thing, mm-hmm. right? And so for years, there was this back and forth where the white writer would say, well, yeah, but I'm trying to reach people who might not be particularly inclined to read a story about black people. I don't want to keep my sales up, correct. Blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, well, then you need to leave this third rail alone because you're not actually addressing it. It was basically the... Well, but Sense 8, and I think some other more recent projects mm-hmm. like Advantageous by Jennifer Fang and a bunch of other people, they are saying basically, screw that. Let's go right at it. We can have a science fiction component and still go right at it. Did you see Advantageous? Did we talk about that? Jennifer Fang, they made a sci-fi movie called Advantageous around the same time as Ex Machina, which got all this crazy hype, whatever. Ex Machina was a good movie, but mm-hmm. it was discussing subject matter that had been exhausted in like 1978 in science fiction books. Advantageous was roughly the same budget, mm-hmm. made by largely Asian American backing, largely Asian American cast.
Oh, I had this on my Netflix queue.
Jennifer Fang is a fantastic director. She, mm-hmm. I think she's been doing a bunch of The Exorcist right now, which mm-hmm. is basically why I'll be watching it. Mm-hmm. Got no publicity, but it's a straight up sci-fi thing about what some might call women's issues, but mm-hmm. are really about identity and aging and social, how our society eats people in this mm-hmm. particular way. And they didn't use a proxy freaking alien, nor does Sense8 use a proxy alien, nor does Cloud Atlas use a proxy alien. They mm-hmm. go right at the thing, and you can't tell me it's not hardcore sci-fi. Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of stories that let me into people's points of view, points of ways of addressing what you think of as a common subject that we all know what we think about it. Again, I made a hand gesture. I don't know why I'm doing that. Nobody can see them.
Quotes.
But that's what I like when I see that. And that's why I recommend Sense8. And I'm sure. surprised it didn't blow the hell up like it should have.
Well, let me just say this little piece, because this is more about me asking you guys questions.
Okay.
And so that people at home can learn how to personalize what the thing is for them. Mm-hmm. For me, what stories excite me are the stories that, like, for instance, I always go back to like why I write, right? So I go back to the stories that excite me, which are underdog stories. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I always find a way. If you ever read any script that I hand you, in some way, somebody's the underdog. And I think it comes from my background, being a black dude from the hood, gay, et cetera, being the punk rock kid in the neighborhood. I'm always the outsider trying to get in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I always find a way to horror, drama, comedy, whatever I'm writing, somebody is trying to get in somewhere. They're the underdog in some way. You know what I mean?
Well, okay, so this is...
So I'm attracted to that, which is why Moonlight moved me so much, because he was the underdog.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you should see it. Well, so this is like two things that you're talking. This is like part of another question, maybe. But so theme and that kind of element. I mean, that occurs a lot to me. I mean, I tend to like to write redemption stories.
Okay,
and I like redemption stories because mm-hmm. there's been things in my life where like people have either misread me on things that I've done and I feel like it's kind of like an underdog thing in a sense, but mm-hmm. it's kind of like I have to make something right. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's just for me, mm-hmm. but that has a lot to do with, you know, stuff that I read, stuff that I write, that has a lot to do with like, on a more micro level, like when I'm designing sentences mm-hmm. or when I'm designing how people are responding to send, you know, to events mm-hmm. in the story, you have to think about like, what's the transportive language that helps your scene happen too, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I'll just, you know, there's like a moment I want to talk about this thing, but I can't. Because I'm still working on it. But it's just one of those.
Yeah, you don't want to get it.
Yeah, where it's like you have to say, you know, that's to me that just helps you write because then you find a joy, and this is where I do find joy. Mm-hmm. You do find a joy in how you're constructing the sentences, sure, and what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a short story I wrote called Purity, mm-hmm, about it's set in this world where like all the water in the world is blighted by a, you know, like a nuclear event from the Cuban Missile Crisis that actually went down, mm-hmm, say like 20, 30 years from now. And there's this water that can, there's water that's been engineered that can clean other water by contact, mm-hmm, right? And but the story is about a guy.
That sound like you wrote it, Jeff.
Okay,
I got a big old smile on my face.
Yeah, and the story is about a guy who fucked up his schooling, and mm-hmm, you know, it was a Common Core. So I wanted to talk about that, and mm-hmm, he has to make his world right for his life, and he promised his wife that he'd make he'd give them a good life, mm-hmm, and he hasn't. Mm-hmm. But here's his shot to do that. Mm-hmm. It also gives him this sense of like, I'm more of who I should be. Like, I can, sure, live my more authentic, true self if I can just get to here, you, mm-hmm, know? And I was like, and that's his journey. Mm-hmm. The whole thing with the water is just like, you know,
backstory.
Yeah, like, you know, like that's my MacGuffin.
Yeah,
right.
You know,
yeah.
But, you know, and that's how I wanted to set it up, because that's what, like, so when I'm writing it and what he's going through emotionally, like, those lines of, is all about like,
but that's the sci-fi parts, the shiny wrapping paper to make, right, somebody go, oh, mm-hmm, neat, yeah, what's that?
Yeah,
but it will fall completely flat without the other,
right,
thing that you're describing, right, which is what it's really about,
right? I mean, yeah, well, yeah, and there's a lot of sci-fi, particularly, mm-hmm, science fiction and fantasy,
yeah,
that is primarily about the MacGuffin,
yeah,
and it's, totally, very difficult to watch, or very difficult, mm-hmm, to read, or very,
and they fail,
and they fail.
That's why they fail.
Yeah, and there's people, and that shit is more written. Because people write it and get it out as opposed to being made, because I'm not putting $2 million behind shit like that, you know?
And it's crazy. The thing that always drives me nuts, and it's a fascinating thing to me anyway, a couple of years back, I do these weird thought experiments of what's the minimum amount of money it would take to make this movie I want to make, mm-hmm, right, or this show I want to make. Mm-hmm. Hilliard and I went down a little road on that on a Netflix pilot we were trying to maybe, mm-hmm, put together. But one of the things fascinating to me is you can make a shitty movie for the same amount of money it costs to make a good movie.
Correct.
And if you do your prep right, someone should read the script and go, really? The girl's going to do all that? Can't she? Like, we're not going to change the scene structure. We're not going to change the locations. Can you just give her, can you make her a person? Mm-hmm. Like, do another pass just looking at the female, this particular female character. Mm-hmm. Make her a person. I don't know what that means. Writer, go write that and make it a person, right? And then you give me a draft that's basically the same movie, but all, mm-hmm, of a sudden it's freaking Taxi Driver or something,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
because there's humans in it. Mm-hmm. And what generally happens with weaker screenwriters, and I think lazy or frankly hack screenwriters, mm-hmm, is they become so plot dependent. All they care about is, I got to hit this tent pole in the plot. I got to hit this next beat in the plot. Mm-hmm. I'm following that Sid Field book by, mm-hmm, page 15. This better happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's not how stories are told. And that's not why people remember stories, right? That's not why stories reach, mm-hmm, in. There's no mechanical means by which you may generate this. You must, to be memorable, Casablanca was a one-off,
yeah,
one of many movies that were made that year. Mm-hmm. Nobody thought that shit was going to blow up. It was just one more Bogart, right, movie. Who gives a shit? And it was basically a bottle episode.
Writers, all this, mm-hmm, shit.
From the point of view of a feature making, mm-hmm, that was a bottle episode. It was shot entirely on the back lot in basically three rooms. It cost a dime to make, and it was part of Bogie's contract.
I never knew that part.
Okay.
Interesting, really.
So at the time, and by the way, it had been a reasonably successful play, mm-hmm, right? They tried it once before and it had bombed, really? Right? Like all this other stuff going in, but we don't remember Everybody Goes to Rick's.
Mm-hmm.
We don't remember that stage play, mm-hmm, which got reasonably good reviews. Okay, we remember the shit out of Casablanca because of the people in it, the, yeah, things that were done. It wasn't just the acting, it was well written.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so you mentioned this thing with the Sid Field book and the plot points and stuff like that. I mean, like, I look at those points, you know, because that to me is a pacing issue, right?
Yes.
See, mm-hmm, people need to look at those points as, this is your fence.
Correct. This is so exactly how I see it.
It's
exactly how I see it.
And you have all this room to play, mm-hmm, to show me the people.
Right.
You know, because that and then you realize that, oh, if my act break is here, say you're following the Save the Cat thing. Mm-hmm. My Eckbrink is at page 30, and mm-hmm. he's telling me he's at page 25. Then I have a pacing issue, which means mm-hmm. you got to go back and rewrite and figure out how to make the people pop with less space. That's where that's your craft.
Correct.
How do I, you know, this scene is a page and a half. Mm-hmm. It's got to be a page. Yeah. How do I make it pop in a page as opposed to a page and a half? I mean, and that's tricky.
But see, that's exactly the problem and the thing that I have with everybody. People hand me these scripts and I'm like, this is too long. And they're like, well, why is it too long? I have 110, 120 pages. I'm like, you should be trying to get to like 105, 100. You should be trying to think faster so that your act breaks, for instance, become under.
And here's the problem.
You try to get it at page 24, 25, 26.
And if TV, you know what I mean? If TV is different than motion pictures in any way, it isn't precisely that sure. way. Because we, at least until very recently, have exclusively been married to a particular number of act breaks.
Correct.
Because we have to have commercial breaks with the act break.
Now they're doing 7 on a lot of shows. It's crazy.
We were losing our shit when they made us go to 6 because it breaks up the way a story is told.
Totally.
Like, after a certain point, you just can't. You're not telling a story,
mm-hmm.
right? You're just doing sort of weird vignettes that end mm-hmm. up in a commercial. Mm-hmm. So writers will push back on that. But the thing is that, and I think it's a legitimate thing to use as a crutch. When new writers come in, I don't forgive older writers. Older writers get a smack. But new writers, when they come in, you're looking for that thing that you can hold on to while you flail into the writing,
mm-hmm.
while you're doing your best but not really feeling your way through. You want that sort of like, okay, those are the anchor points. And the anchor points are those plots, sure. right? You know how the plot's going to go because in theory you've done an outline, mm-hmm. so you know where you're going. So I can hang on to that, and by page 20-something I have to have done this and all makes sense. But the trap is mm-hmm. that you think that that ladder is the building.
Yeah.
And the ladder is just the thing you climb to get into the building.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
when you get the opportunity to go back and add what some might be unnecessary nuance, mm-hmm. it's the difference between the girlfriend who gets shot and she's only there to get shot, and the partner who risks her freaking life, correct. Takes down 6 of the other guys, mm-hmm. dies in your arms and says, motherfucker, don't fuck yeah. this up
because
I just sacrificed my exactly. shit for you.
Exactly.
That's a better woman in a fridge, mm-hmm. so-called, than a woman in a fridge.
Correct.
You still don't want to do it, but if you have to do it, mm-hmm. make it fucking matter.
Yeah, well,
and that's a draft.
Well,
that's
well,
a draft.
Well, you know, I was watching this show, Good Behavior, mm-hmm. the other day, just to pile on that. And it's
TNT, right?
Yeah, TNT. I like those TNT dramas. They're kind of elevated in a way. You know, some stuff happens in the beginning and blah blah blah, and she's kind of crazy. And there's just a moment where she's on the phone and she's just talking, and she's like, and you kind of know context of what's going on, and even the dialogue is a little. It's not clearing anything up until she gets to the end and she's like, Mom, don't be so cruel to me. And then she starts crying. Mm. And then she's like, Mom, because you know her mom's hung up the phone. And she like throws the phone against the wall. Mm. And all of a sudden, and she's like doing some little petty crimes. And it's kind of like, so she just seemed like a grifter kind of thing. And you're like, oh.
Now I get it.
Now I see there's something really about her. Like she's not just.
She's more flawed than you thought she was.
It's just a small. And you don't hear the mom on the other side. You just hear her talking. And it's one of those things where it's like when you're. It's one of those things about like writing dialogue. You know, I was telling you there's a thing, just like there's 3 different ways to do to put information in the dialogue.
Correct.
You can put it in the top, you can put it in the middle, you can bury it at the end. And depending on, you know, depending on what kind of suspense level you want to do in the scene, you drop it. You drop the key thing at the end.
You do it with subtitles.
You know,
whatever.
Yeah, you know, and everything else is leading up to that. You know, because if she'd opened the scene and said, "Hey, Mom," then the rest of it is just kind of like
talking.
It's just talking,
right?
You know, but you don't know that. You know,
that a perfect example of that is this Amazon show, Goliath, that I just
I would have watched that.
Writers watch the shit out of that show. David E. Kelly, who I've personally, frankly, written off as like he had his time.
Yeah.
He did that terrible Wonder Woman script that I was like,
they were
David,
shooting it here. Remember Billy Bob Thornton?
Yeah, I met him, and he was really nice.
Yeah, I did too. Really nice.
But. I was like, this was full disclosure. I used to be a huge David E. Kelly fan, and then I was really not a David E. Kelly fan. I was like, come on, David. You're rich. You don't need to do this. If you want to go play, go play. Right? He came to play on this one. And it's what we were sort of talking about before. It's the difference between being forced to adhere to the traditional old school network standard versus I'm just telling you motherfuckers a cool ass story. Watch this shit.
Well, you know,
it's great, and it fits what you just said about where to drop the data, where, you know, how to shape a scene where the revelation at the end of what is just a discrete little scene, and at the end of it, you go, oh my God. Even though it was beautiful before that, it's just like that ding. Mm-hmm. Now I gotcha. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a textbook for a writer.
You know, there was a somebody read. I have this quote that I have. I have all these quotes of like myself. Mm-hmm. And a keyboard, and I write these things that I really like about. There's like three that I really have. The one of them was I really think is so interesting is this guy was saying, it might be Stephen King, but he was saying, the writer must be vigilant that he could lose the reader with any word on any page.
Say it again.
Okay.
Like that. Say it again.
The writer must be vigilant to know he's not gonna that he can lose the reader with any word on any page.
Damn, right.
And therefore you
that's
gotta
real talk.
I mean it's given to you. Nothing is given to you.
You know, and you're like I mean, the fucking thing about that is no matter how well
you're not really in control.
No.
You either are or you are.
That is your It's I mean, it's like you could go 35 pages.
Yeah.
And then fuck up like one scene or one sentence on a page. And
What's that show I was talking about last time?
It's the big bump, right?
The Son of Zorn or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going in again.
Yeah.
But it's a perfect example of that. Because I'm watching this thing. I love Tim Meadows. Tim Meadows is in it. It's got a cartoon barbarian in it, so I'm already halfway home.
He-Man.
Right? Blah, 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 blah. And then I get to this scene where they do this bit, and he's trying to get a job, and it's all real funny. And the reveal that you describe at the end of the scene is he gets the job that he's completely unqualified for because he is a diversity hire, which is revealed to the audience by a check or a little squiggle on a piece of paper. Hire him, he's a diversity hire. And I was like, that's the sort of Darth Vader version of what you're describing because the whole scene in theory is funny because he's a goofball. And then it suddenly becomes, no, fuck you, everyone who isn't like me.
Correct.
With one line.
Correct.
That totally changed the context of the entire scene. Mm. So fuck you back, everyone who made that particular show. But writers, that matters. One sentence is enough to, I will never watch another thing. I will never watch another episode of that show.
That was the pilot, wasn't it?
That was the pilot.
Wow.
I will never watch another episode of that show. And if I remember, if I bother to remember the names of the people behind it, I will never watch anything that they make. Hey, but it's real like that. It's real like that. Yeah, I'm just an audience member. I don't write comedy. I don't have any backstage knowledge about how sitcoms work or any of that crap. I'm just some guy watching a TV show. In that time, in that place, I'm just watching a show.
And you, and then all of a sudden you lost a reader.
And you lost a viewer.
You lost a viewer. I mean, it's that's the thing. I mean, there's like another, I'll tell you this other thing that I really like that I have read that one of these things. It's like, because I think
we start wrapping it up.
Yeah, it's fascinating to what we were talking about craft. It's
every episode, I'm going to do that.
It's about secrets.
Okay. What is it?
This is how you really like set off. This is you're saying about the character, the woman. You don't, she's don't, just don't shoot her and everything like that, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's that every character has secrets that for, that they're hiding for noble or ignoble reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to you to let that come out the right way to reveal who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And how strong are they going to fight to keep that secret? Because that's the drama.
When you press them, what do they do?
Yeah,
when you press that button, what do they
drama,
do?
That's the drama.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, once you, and you're like, oh, okay, so that helps you to get your character because then you know this is what this is what's at stake for them all the time.
This is funny. There was a show I used to watch. It's off the air now called Banshee. That was
Banshee. I love that show.
Oh, Christ, I love that show. But one of the fascinating things about that show to me, and I don't know because I've never read one of the Banshee scripts, but I can't believe it wasn't also written.
Mm-hmm.
The actor did this so well. Was without giving away the whole premise, you have a guy with a history of violence who's in a job of law enforcement, right? So his way of solving problems is basically with his fists, and he's really, really good. So like, if it's a room of eight guys and they're bigger than him, he's probably going to take those eight guys, and he knows it, right? So if you kept pushing his buttons, he would get to a point where it's like, look, And like, he doesn't have a tell or anything, mm-hmm. but you could feel like he's like checking his watch, like, how long is it going to take to kill all these people, right? And
as he's already sized them up.
He's already sized everybody up, knows where the exits and the weapons are. Exactly. This fight's already over, dudes. You need to stop talking 2 minutes ago, right?
Yeah.
And you can see it on his face. But the way the show is shaped, there's the sort of ape-like boy in my head that's like, oh, he's about to kick the shit out of these dudes. And then there's the adult male in my head that's like, really? You understand that if you beat up these 10 guys, it's going to really screw this whole thing that you've got going, and you're trying to get your life going this way.
You should hide. You should hide who you are.
You're hiding who you are.
Masquerading and shit.
All of this stuff's going on that if you beat them up could put that in real jeopardy. Mm-hmm. And you see this look on his face, and every time he gets in that situation, and it's the testament to a well-written, well-created show. Part of your brain knows for sure those asses are about to get whipped.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part of your brain still hopes, continues to hope, that he will make the right choice this time.
Hmm.
That he will be the person that you want him to. He keeps almost being this better person that he's kind of almost.
Because he chose, he chose this job that can redeem him.
Right. But he won't let it.
So you're constantly, there's that struggle back and forth with him.
But you watch it, and it has to be, some of those moments had to be scripted. They weren't just improvisational. That is masterful writing because it's done without words, right? That's the writer saying to director and actor, here's what this moment is.
We're going to see. It just started pouring outside.
You're kidding. Holy crap.
In L.A.
Wow,
thank you. I love when we have weather.
It's like Miami and shit where all of a sudden, bam.
I wish it would be like this.
Remember the episode, Messi, when he fights the wrestler?
Oh, my God.
The box, whatever it is. That was like an ass beating.
No kidding.
That was an ass beating.
That was straight up,
I was like feeling like, we've seen a lot of violence on television and movies. And
they went in.
You know, I'm sitting there cringing. I'm like, fuck. Because he got his ass beat.
Yep. And the difference between that scene and the scene with Negan in the opening bit of...
oh, my God. The Walking Dead?
Yeah. See, I'm out on The Walking Dead. They lost me. And I knew what was coming from the comic books, but I felt that the way that was shot was too sort of violence porn. Whereas Banshee is chock full of violence.
Yeah. But it never came off like it was porny.
It never came off like, oh, get a little sexual thrill out of this. It was like a couple of mechanics who knew how to break a human body going at it. And you're just like, holy crap. It makes you sort of watch it through your fingers. And I've been in fights. You don't watch fights that way. They don't go that long, for one thing. But like, when you watch Negan... There was a sense that the audience, that the makers of that particular episode wanted you to like it, that there was something sexy about it. And I was like, this is not sexy, man. This is not sexy. I'm not holding that bat.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be the one happy to hold that bat. And you made it really attractive.
It's making us be sadists. Speaking of that, did you see the Chappelle thing?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, that's
funny.
On
SNL?
That was funny.
He is a genius.
That was funny.
DC, represent. He's from DC.
Before we wrap up, let's just answer one last question. Let's just try to make this a short one.
Okay.
Damn it.
So, is there anything that the industry is doing? I'm sorry. What should the industry be doing for screenwriters that it isn't doing?
Stop hiring your nephews. Stop hiring your girlfriends and your daughters and your sons. And
nepotism.
Stop that. Merit. Nick the names off the scripts. Take the names off the scripts and just read them. And if it reaches you, buy that fucking script. If it happens to be your nephew who wrote it, great. But if it happens to be some freaking Puerto Rican 12-year-old from the Bronx, buy the shit out of that script. Okay?
There's this fake meritocracy going on.
Merit creates money. Ask the NFL.
Yeah, good point.
A meritocracy creates money, and anyone who's a real player, which I fucking am, wants a flat field, wants it to be merit. Because even if I lose, which I will a lot, there's no shame in that loss because I got beat by Muhammad fucking Ali.
Correct.
Okay, he's the greatest boxer of all time. I lasted 10 minutes with him. Fuck you. How long did you last? But if I win, I also know that there's no thumb on the scale, and I don't have to. I can hold my head up.
What about you, Chris?
I would say, I think there's it's the free shit. the free rewrites, the free like all the free
paper
treatments,
teaming,
the
all that shit.
Because
stop that shit.
Because see, to me, like all that does is it cheapens what writers do, and honestly, there's nothing without the writers. It's like you saying, that's the key you put in that's the black box that opens up, that hires fucking 50 people that triggers the $60 million to do a season. Correct. So don't cheat them. Don't just one step deal shit in the feature world. It's stupid. Mm-hmm. It's fucked up shit. Because guess what? What if every fucking writer, said to actors, hey, come back and do this scene for free because we didn't get it right last time.
Yeah, watch that.
They're not happening.
Ever.
The whole crew, they come back for 3 days to reshoot for free.
We were on the wrong hill that day.
Because guess
the
what?
The grips and gaffers are going to come back for free.
It wasn't.
They're the first one who's pissed if you didn't call Grace. Okay?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. You're not doing that to them. You're not doing that to them. And they're not working unless you get it right. Mm-hmm. Or whoever it is writing this, get it right. So. And they would never come back for free. And if it's a fuck up, like we didn't like the way it tested, you gonna come back for free?
Yeah, there's no such thing as free.
But there is for writers.
I know.
Which is bullshit.
Forget
that
concept.
That shit.
Forget that concept. There's no such thing as free. And writers, from the writer's side, there's different versions of free.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not being compensated, it doesn't have to be money, especially starting out. But if you're not being compensated in some real tangible way that helps you,
correct.
Okay. Let's say it's a prestigious publication that you get into. They don't pay very much, but everyone in the freaking world's going to read it. Take the $50 thing.
Correct.
It should be $500.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stuff
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
If they don't want to pay you in money, but they're giving you a brand new editing suite or a recently used editing suite to take home, maybe consider doing that.
Yeah. A good credit.
A good credit.
I mean.
But that's for starting out.
Yeah. Sure. But to me, like, even if you're writing and you got a career, I mean, I'm not saying. Don't do anything. I mean, if the producers say, hey, can you do like a polisher's week? Can you, I mean, as you realize, take you like a week maybe to polish up this thing. Okay, maybe do that.
Here's what I think
but
about
don't
that.
Have it.
I'm going back to your original
it's
thing.
It's a
though.
Month.
If they contracted you for X number of polishers, because all that stuff's supposed to be enumerated.
All those stuff have a fee.
if they have the balls to come to you and say, do this thing for free, then they're shady.
Correct.
Because they shouldn't expect you to do
that. That's true. I get that. But there's always that point where you say to yourself, if they're like, I need this little piece done, like I need these three scenes done, and then we're going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, what do you want?
I would like to be the person to offer the free work. If we're all sitting there in the editing booth and we hear all this stuff, and
yeah,
it's like,
okay.
You know what would fix that scene? If I just change that little bit of dialogue a little bit, you guys mind? Then they'll be happy to take it for free.
Yeah.
They don't ask me to do it for free. If they ask me, they're asking to pay me.
Correct. Right. Right. That's true.
Or they're shady.
That's true. Correct. That's true. That's true.
Or correct. You're shady.
On that note, that's what's up. Good episode, y'all. So where you at, Jeff Thorne?
Well, I'm at jeffthorne.com, jeffreythorne.com. I'm at Game of Thorns on Twitter or Jeff Thorne on Twitter, depending on how you want to search me.
If you can handle it.
If you can handle it. I got a couple of publications on Medium. One is a comic book and one is my thoughts about the election, which fairly dark. You may not want to go there. That's at Medium.com, also Game of Thorns, if you want to look me up there. And that's it. I got a Facebook presence, Dreamnasium on Facebook. That's it.
And you're out there developing.
Making stuff, stuff I can't talk about. Oh, and my comic book, Mosaic, from Marvel Comics, every month.
Read it. Read
it. You need to read it because it's the shit.
Yes.
That's it.
Okay, cool. Where you at, Chris? Derek?
I'm at shadowboxercinema.net, and that's where I'm putting up some stuff right now, just some writing pieces. I am on Twitter at unauthorizedCBD. I'm on Instagram at the same thing, unauthorizedCBD. Mm-hmm. Just look me up under Christopher Derek. I haven't been looking at Facebook that much. I had to turn it off at the end of September. It's just too much for me. What the hell happened to the world? And Facebook was complicit in that shit.
Yes, you were. Yes, you were. Stop shaking your head. You were complicit, and you know you were complicit. Did it on purpose.
So y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. You guys can find me on at Hilliard Guest on Twitter. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR, on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. You see, we answered a few.
Not we still got about
19 more, but we'll do them another time. And please go on Facebook, follow us there. Hilliard Guest at Screenwriters Rant Room. We appreciate it. Go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review. We really need that for the metrics and shit like that. Shout out to Lisa Bolacaja. She'll be back next week. And
I bolt my arms up in the air like it's a touchdown, Lisa. We miss you, Lisa.
She can see you, right?
If only you could see me, because I make all these visual gestures on an audio program.
Exactly, exactly. And y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. Keep it real. Keep it opinionated. Keep it what, everybody?
2016.
Peace, y'all.
Let the beast about the cage, that light about the dark. Can you build the inferno from an itty bitty spark? Coffee shop hustlers rise with the cream. A million other writers, same Hollywood dream. Your pen and paper, all like bullets in the gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. In the Rant Room, we say what we say, we do what we feel. We gotta keep it real. In the Rant Room, all about the crap of screen.
So look, if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get in. Mm-hmm.